Hey, I'm Russell Leeds.
And I'm James.
And welcome to the Property Investors Podcast. On this week's show, we're going to be sharing how James retired from one property deal. Now, actually, you didn't retire, did you? You carried on working.
No.
But financially, you put yourself in a situation where you could retire.
Yeah.
Now, the thing that I find really crazy about this is we're living in a world right now where people can't retire.
Mm-hmm.
You know, did you know, for example, that most millennials think that they will never be able to retire?
Yeah.
Right? Because...
I used to think that.
Did you really?
Did you?
What was your thought process?
Well, I used to be a gas plumber and I earned good money, but I couldn't get away from the job. So I used to think, well, when I stop work, money's going to stop. So am I going to retire?
So what sort of money were you earning as a gas plumber?
Good money, between $5,000 and $7,000 a month.
Do look like a plumber. You've got the just bend forward a bit. You're definitely a plumber. You've got the plumber looks. You're earning what sort of money?
Between $5,000 and $7,000 a month.
Okay.
So it was decent money, but I just could not get away from it.
So were you saving at the time or just spending that money?
Spending
the money.
Yeah, because I didn't understand how money worked. I used to think money was for spending. But when you realise money's actually for investing and using the cash flow to spend, your life's a lot better.
I heard a good quote from Tristan Tate, and he said, 50% of your money, treat it as though you're going to die in 50 years.
Yeah.
The other 50% of your money, treat it as though you're going to die in 50 days.
Yeah, I like that.
I like that as
well.
Yeah, just kind of getting that balance between... Yeah. You know, you've always got this, you've got the savers and you've got the spenders.
Yeah.
Right? So the savers, obviously, they save everything. I want to invest it. But then it's like, but what's the point in having loads of money if all you do is is save it?
Yeah.
Right? Just what, to have more? So you just got a bigger pot of money? Like, what for? And then you've got the people that blow everything they've got. Sounds like you were one of those people.
Yeah.
Which means you have a good life.
It's fun. On paper, yeah.
Well, we mentioned Diego Maradona, didn't we, yesterday?
We
were watching the football. Obviously, the Euros are on. And someone was like, well, you know, he did have a good life.
Yeah.
It's that balance, isn't it?
Yeah.
He died young. He was really fat. He probably had a lot of fun.
Oh, he definitely had a lot of fun.
But so do you want to go that route?
No.
And have a lot of fun, though. I suppose the ultimate opposite would be someone that was really boring, in bed at 9.
Yeah.
You know, eat vegetables. And it's like, well, okay, I also want to live my life and have fun.
Yeah,
it's that balance.
You've got to find a balance, aren't you? Definitely, yeah. But it were hard to find a balance then, because I just worked so hard. And then when I came home, it was like, now it's playtime. I could never find a balance. It was either I would work hard or I was trying to play
hard.
So, yeah.
You work hard, play hard.
Exactly. And then the money just goes.
Yeah.
Nice cars, holidays, motorbikes, clothes, things that don't, you know, bring you anything. Really. Yeah. I mean, they do, yeah.
things that bring you a lot of enjoyment.
Just smiles.
Just fun. How many hours were you working at the time?
I would usually do a 12-hour days minimum, 6 to 7 days a week.
Oh, wow.
Day 7 would be paperwork day.
Right.
And I would work Monday to Saturday. Because
when did you play hard? I think it's like work hard, sleep
hard. This is
hard.
What I mean, though. Yeah. This is what I mean, though, because... that's when I realised I could have never really retired comfortably from that job, because when I used to stop to play hard, the money stopped. Because I'd have to eat into either a paperwork day, which then run into another day, or a work day, and then I weren't earning any money.
So you were self-employed?
Yeah. I got a couple of boys working for me as well. They were doing well, but then it was just I was micromanaging them, I was trying to do my own stuff, and... I hit a ceiling, basically.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Unless I could have got an eighth day, I weren't doing anything.
But then you'd have done the same thing, wouldn't you?
Exactly.
You'd have earned more money, you'd have spent that money as well.
Exactly, yeah. Slept harder.
Yeah. Even God only had 7 days, James, you know.
Yes.
So all right, so you're earning pretty good money.
Yeah.
Anyway, so but you're spending it all and working hard, playing hard, etc. You then found this deal that as a, how much are you earning from this deal on an annual basis?
We that property in the said property, it turns over 65,000 income at the minute. We're probably going to increase that slightly.
Turns over or profit?
Turns over. We profit about 3.5 grand a month from that one,
which is about the average salary, probably more.
Slightly above, I'd say. Yeah.
Slightly more above the average salary. So just one deal, and it's put you above the average salary. So I suppose what everyone's going to want to be knowing at home is, number one, how did you find it? So then they can maybe learn how they... So how did you find this deal?
So I actually went to one of your crash courses.
Yeah.
And I learned how to look at opportunities that other people couldn't see. And this said deal had been sat on Rightmove for nearly 3 years.
That is crazy, isn't it?
Yeah.
What's the lesson there? Right, there's a because like you kind of think,
don't think
that's
like
even
everybody
surprised
else.
Me that is.
Yeah,
you kind of think the good deals go quick and you've got to be fast.
Yeah,
he was sat on Rightmove for 3 years.
Yeah,
and it's this banger of a deal. Yeah. Rightmove, and every man and his dog
yes,
can see
exactly,
it.
Exactly. Yeah.
That. Yeah. That's mind blowing. Yeah.
And there've been plenty of people try to buy it and then pulled out because it were a grey one, to say the least. It weren't just a straight sale.
What do you mean by grey?
So the council had been using it as a hostel, but it had previous planning on it to turn it into offices.
Okay.
So it was Class E.
Mm-hmm.
And so then technically, the council were breaking the law because they shouldn't have been running it as... Because a hostel fell under...
Yeah, you got to remember, though, the council... Can do what they want.
Oh, no. Yeah, yeah. So because they've not got the right class on it, then when investors were coming to buy it, they were like, oh, 10-bed HMO. Then solicitor to get hold of it and go, hang on a minute, this is Class E. You're not going to be able to refinance it.
Okay.
So then they were just walking away from it and deal after deal after deal were falling through.
And right. Then, so the problem was too big for most people.
Yeah, they just were like... Move on to the next thing. That's too big.
Okay. And did this... What did it... Because if it's on for 3 years, you'd think that they'd be starting to get pretty desperate. That's a long time, isn't it?
He kept the price the same.
Did he?
Yeah, so he dropped 5 grand in the end. Because when I looked 3 years ago, it was up at like 275. And we ended up paying 270 for it.
Wow.
So he were a very stubborn guy.
Probably another reason it didn't go.
Yeah, because even when we were dealing with him, it nearly fell through a couple of times just because he was slow and I think he got too much money, this guy who owned it.
No such thing, James.
Yeah, but it were a difficult one to get over the line, to say the least.
So how long did the sales process go? We've just completed on a hotel, as you know, near Cambridge.
Yeah.
And we've been in negotiations with them for 18 months.
Yeah. This was nearly a year.
Yeah.
Yeah. It drags on sometimes, doesn't it? But
it drags on. Why do you think property... Because I think people in general are quite slow. It's one of the things with our business, we're really fast.
Yeah.
Right, so we're, when it's in our control, we always try and be as fast as we can. When you're dealing with in property and you're dealing with councils and planning permission and solicitors and everything's so slow, isn't
yes.
it? Why,
yes.
why is it so slow?
I think it's just because their income does not really change much whether they are quick or whether they're not quick. They're just getting paid the same, aren't they? Whereas to us, it's like, if this deal falls through, I've already get the solicitor $1,000.
Mm.
We've put planning in. We've instructed as broker. We've got things hanging in the balance. Whereas a solicitor, you know, if it falls through, they're still going to charge you something. So they're not in no rush.
They don't care. If it had fallen through after, say, 12 months,
yeah,
would you have been devastated?
I wouldn't say devastated. I'd have just moved on to the next thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, it'd have hurt a little bit because I could see the potential with it, and the fact it'd been sat there for 3 years, I thought, when I get this now, people's going to be like, damn, I should have bought that.
Mm.
So there were a lot hanging on it. But no, I wouldn't say I'd have been devastated. I would have just.
I don't think you can be, can you? I think when I first started in property, I don't know, 15 years ago, whatever now, and I'd find a deal, my whole focus and everything would be, oh, yeah, this golden egg of a deal.
Yeah, this is it.
This is it. This is the one, right? It was like true love.
Yes.
Right, and then when it does fall out of bed, you're like, oh, I can't believe it. But as you get more, now you've got to play the field, haven't you?
Yeah.
You've got to have multiple deals on the go, because you know, even brilliant, that you know that stuff is going to fall out of bed.
Definitely.
I remember Samuel saying to me when I first got, he goes, property investment's great, but you've got to remember to discipline your disappointment.
Yeah, that's good.
It will disappoint. Definitely. That's the first rule. Before you even start, don't get too emotionally invested. You've got to remember it's just a game.
Yeah. Yeah, it is, yeah. And there's plenty more out there, isn't there?
Plenty more fish in the sea.
Exactly.
So, anyway, you got this deal. It took 18 months. It was very slow. So what attracted you to the deal in the first place? Obviously, we talked about the problem of the problem of the wrong use class. Yeah. But that probably wasn't what attracted you.
No, right? Definitely
you weren't thinking,
not, no.
Problems. You kind of do want to be there, don't you?
Yeah.
Because the less problems,
the less profit. Usually. Yeah.
As entrepreneurs, our job is to solve problems. So if you can find problems, it's what you've done here. You've solved a problem. A problem that put off other property investors.
Yes.
Because it was the wrong use class.
Yeah.
But what attracted you to it in the first place? Was it in a state of disrepair? Did you think you could change the use from to the HMO, was it you were saying?
Yeah.
All right, tell me your thought process.
All of the above. I mean, for a start, it's a big one. It sits on a nice estate. It's a big detached house. It's been used as a hostel previously. None of the neighbours liked it. And I thought, when we get hold of this, I know for a start, they're going to complain, because when we're converting it into a HMO, neighbours always complain, which is natural.
Yeah.
But then when they see the finished product, and we've turned it into a high spec HMO, we've got professional tenants in there, we up the value of that house so much that it actually increases their house prices as well, which they never look at. Because you've got to think then, the average on that street goes up massively. Because we've literally now got the most expensive residential property on that street, or property that residents are living in anyway.
Yeah.
So we're actually dragging their house price up. But yeah, I mean, it's a cracking deal. It were in a poor condition, so I knew I could add value to it straight away. It were nice and big, so I knew I weren't going to have to struggle with room sizes, and I could add en suites. It had been sat there a while, so I hoped the investor would have been motivated, but he
wasn't
at all. We had to really push it through, and then because it took so long. Because I actually applied for a certificate of lawful use prior to the purchase. So I had to keep stalling the guy as well, which he did not like. I had to bung him a couple of grand as well to keep him sweet, because he was like, right, I'm done with this. Because obviously 7 months in, then he was like, why is this not completing?
And why wasn't it?
Because what we said is, if I couldn't have got the certificate of lawful use, I would just stuck with a block of offices that I'd paid 270 grand for, which in today's market, obviously commercial premises are
worthless.
Not worthless, but yeah, worth less.
So just explain to anyone that doesn't understand, why was that important?
Because the certificate of lawful use, is that what you mean?
Yeah.
That then legally allowed me to run it as a HMO, which then when I refinanced it, the lender will ask for proof that it's a legal HMO.
So you weren't changing the use class?
Yes and no. It's a bit grey, a certificate of lawful use, because they're basically saying, although it's a Class E offices, we're also recognising it's now sui generis and that you're running it as a 10-bed HMO.
Yeah.
Now, the only downside of the certificate of lawful use, which sometimes they do with planning as well, is they'll actually write on the certificate 10-bed HMO.
So you couldn't do a 9-bed HMO?
No, I can. I can, because I can still have it as a 10 just with 9 rooms.
You couldn't do an 11?
No. Nah.
It's not like it's just a HMO.
No, because and the rooms are big enough to double up. So technically, I could have run it as a 20-bed HMO, which the council were panicking about.
Because you might try and do that.
Yeah, which again. But that would have just been 10 couples instead of 10 single people. But because they physically wrote on the certificate of lawful use 10-bed HMO, that's all I can do with it, but that's all I needed anyway.
It's all you can do. It's a tough life, James. Yeah. It's a pain. Yeah, are you going to try and change it? Are you going to try and get like proper planning permission on it?
No, I don't need to.
Happy, we
refinanced it. The lenders were happy. Perfect. They recognise it now as a legal HMO or sui gen, large HMO. So we've no real need to do that.
All right. So let's go through the figures then. So you mentioned you paid $270 yeah. for it. Now, a lot of people are going to be watching this. They're going to be going, all right, it's all right for James. You know, James was a plumber, you can tell. He was earning $7,000 a month. He saved up the money and he's bought it, right? But that wasn't the case.
No, at all.
So how much money did you need to pay the $270,000?
Roughly, we needed around 139,000 in total to purchase on a bridge and refurb. The purchase price was 270.
We're using bridge and development finance.
I think we took a 15 or 20% deposit we paid, and then the rest were on a bridge, and then we funded.
You funded refurb, it yourself.
The refurb. No.
No, but you paid for the bridge. So you just had a bridge, professional finance wise. Was it just a bridge?
Yeah.
And then you used either your money or investors' money. Investors' money for the. Okay, so you didn't use development finance at all.
No, not on this one.
All right, cool. So how much bridge did you get?
I think we took about 80%, give or take 5%. I can't remember exactly. It was a while ago, but yeah, we're about 80% bridge. I've just said 100% bridge recently.
That's crazy, isn't it?
It is in today's market, yeah. And then we've had 75%, 85%, everything.
Even 80% is really good.
It is, yeah. Yeah. I needed 139 grand liquid.
But you wouldn't have got that without the certificate of lawful use, because they'd have just looked at it and gone, well, it's an office block, it's probably worth 150 grand.
From the investor, you mean?
From both.
Oh, well, yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So we couldn't instruct the bridge until, because we knew. Technically, we could have done, because bridging lenders to start with are more than happy to lend you the money if the house is going to be worth what they're lending you. So they'd have just gone, yeah, here's the money. But then if we hadn't got the certificate of lawful use, I knew I wouldn't have been able to get it off of the bridge onto a
Well, then you'd
mortgage.
Have been screwed.
Exactly. They'd have took the house, because, I mean, as a residential, it was probably worth that, give or take. But I was smart enough to realise that I needed to be able to get it off of the bridge onto a commercial mortgage. And commercial mortgages are more difficult than a normal residential mortgage. So, you've got to cross every T and dot every I.
Cool. So you got the bridge, which is great. And I'm assuming you just went for a broker to get that?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And how did you get the rest of the finance? So did you use bridge purely to buy, plus investor money? For the 20% and the refurb?
Yeah.
So how much money did you put in?
Nothing.
Nothing at all?
No.
So you bought this property that's making you like $3,500 a month?
Yeah.
And you didn't put a penny down?
Nothing.
But James, no money deals down don't exist.
Apparently not. But yeah, they do, yeah. Deals like that is... When you're doing a deal that good for you and an investor, it's got to be such a good deal that it benefits you both. There's plenty of opportunity on the market that you can earn some money from property. But when you're pulling investors in, you've got to make sure that deal is a super deal. Because it's got to pay multiple people.
You've got to pay the bridge back. You've got to pay the bridging company. They've got to make their cut.
Yeah.
You've got to pay, obviously, yourself and your investor.
Exactly.
So... what was the deal with for the investor?
So the investor basically, on paper, could just sit at home after they've put the money in. And then I take it from offer stage to fully tenanted and refinanced and everything in between. Fully project managing everything. The investor, at the end of it, owns the property 50-50 with me, because we're in a limited company together. We're both 50-50 directors. And we both get a cash flow from it forever and a day.
So 3.5, is that half to you, half to him? The profit?
Yeah, we split that.
Cool. So you're making about 1.8?
Yeah, roughly,
something
yeah.
like that?
Yeah, at the minute.
At the minute, which is like a salary.
Yeah, I think, is that the average salary? 1,800? Is it a bit more?
Well, yeah, I got the tax situation here and stuff, haven't you, as well?
Yeah.
But I think the if you earn more than £26,000, you're in the top 50% of earners in the UK, right? So technically, it would put you in the top 50% of earners. However, an average full-time salary is about 35.
Okay.
Which would be, what, like 2.5-ish?
Yeah.
Grand?
Yeah.
A month, so...
Yeah.
It's a bit less than an average full-time salary, but it's enough to put you in the top 50% of earners in the UK from one deal that didn't include any money.
And not forgetting when the money, the initial investment, goes back to the investor, which it has, he's then more than happy to chuck it in again, which he has done.
So you've done other deals with him?
Yeah, we're just about to do his third. Yeah.
That's...
So I'm recycling his cash and we're both benefiting from it.
That's great.
It is, yeah.
That's great. So what would you say then? Someone that's getting started. Mm. I suppose you've got two choices. You've got two people you could be in this scenario. You could either be Mr. Moneybags.
Yeah.
Who puts the money in, does nothing. How much money, if you're looking to invest in people's deals, how much money would you need? Like, what, 100k?
Yeah, I would say about 100k, yeah.
All right, so you're either Mr. Moneybags, 100k plus.
Yeah.
Ready to invest in deals with people like you.
Yeah.
Or you can become good... what, finding these deals, managing these deals? Mm-hmm. What, like, and obviously you mentioned it on the crash course, but if you had to give some top tips for people to get into this, starting from scratch, they've got no money.
Yeah.
You know, what would you say? How do they go out finding these deals? Do they look on Rightmove, oldest listed? Find stuff that's 5 years old?
You need to be able to see opportunity that other people can't. You've got to be educated enough that you can see something that the standard property investor can't, because there's so many property investors out there doing single lets, and I may upset a lot of people here, but I believe at the minute single lets are questionable.
Mate, single lets suck right now.
That's what I wanted to say. They are dead, single lets.
Yeah.
You're lucky to break even, let alone make a good profit off them. So you need to start thinking outside the box.
Just to clarify, they suck from a cash flow point of view.
Yeah.
If you can break even, but you're buying it, and they you know, we know they will go up in value.
Yeah.
It's not like, oh, it's a terrible investment.
Yeah, but it's just, but it's a slow investment.
It's very slow.
You're tying it up and, you know, I mean, obviously property's going to go up. There's no question about it. You're eventually going to be able to pull some capital from it, but... Why would you want to tie your money up in something like that when you can tie your money up in something else that's going to cash flow fast?
Mm.
And you're also going to get the capital appreciation. Because that single let's going to go up in 10 years. So is my HMO. So I'm getting the best of both worlds.
So you think you need to be able to... Oh, well, yeah, because you're getting the cash flow. And so you think you need to be good at spotting problems?
100%, yeah.
And then solving those problems.
Exactly, yeah. Problems, money.
So it could be, for example, I know a lot of people that have got their strategies, they find short leases.
Yeah.
You know, and that's a problem that a lot of people are like, oh, don't know.
Yeah.
Anything that makes most investors go, mm.
Definitely, yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, I suppose there is an element of maybe look at oldies first and see why they've been sat there for so long.
Yeah.
It's obviously going to be some opportunity there, but you need to know what that is. You know, if you just go in blind and think, there's some problems here, there's some money to be earned, but you don't know how to solve them problems, that's going to be a problem. But when you can see past it and know what you're going to end up with, when you're sure what you're going to end up with, that's where the money's to be made.
So what sort of problems are you good at solving? Let's come up with a couple of problems. We've already talked about, so wrong use class.
Yeah.
Anything that's illegal.
Yes.
Yeah, it's a good start, right? If it's been rented out
illegally.
I am
from up north, so yeah.
So you're normally the ones causing the illegal problems. What's going on? So anything that's the wrong use class or anything illegal.
Yeah.
What about, we've mentioned short leases.
Yeah.
What other problems would you maybe be looking for that you think, oh, that's a real problem that's going to put a lot of people off? What about Japanese knotweed?
Japanese knotweed's no biggie. Yeah.
Is it enough to scare off?
No, not at all.
Not you? Is it enough to scare off a normal investor?
Definitely, yeah. Yeah, sales will fall through because of Japanese knotweed regular. There's so many myths and incorrect information about it. I mean, I remember once speaking to an investor and he was like, yeah, don't touch up with Japanese knotweed because did you know you've got to go within like a 3-mile radius and rip it all out? And I'm like, what? what, go into other people's gardens and start digging them up? He's like, oh yeah. And I thought, what? Where's this guy getting this information from? So yeah, that's an easy one.
So hold on, you don't have to go 3 miles. That's what I've been telling him on the podcast.
Yeah, but you're not going through.
I'm joking.
You're not going through people's gardens, are you, though, looking for knotweed?
No.
So yeah, that's a straightforward one. The worse condition the house, the better for me. When somebody shows me something, somebody shows me a deal and is like, oh, look at this, what do you think? The first thing I do is look at the internals of it. And if it's finished and it's nicely carpeted and like, oh, it's nice, isn't it? I'm like, there's probably no money to be made in that deal. We need problems, whether it's something as simple as it needs a full refurb or there's a change of use needed or the structural issues, Japanese knotweed, anything like that. That's what we need to be looking for to solve.
Yeah, the more problems the better.
Usually, yeah.
When it comes to houses, not life. Not relationships.
Oh, definitely not.
I look for a woman who's got problems. But when you're looking at houses, you're looking for as many problems as possible. Is there any problem that's been so problematic that you've gone, do you know what? That's too much of a problem for James. That's too much for me. I don't.
I've walked away once from rising damp. I mean, damp's no major issue, but if the deal's like, yeah, it's all right, this, we can make some money out of it, and then you find a load of damp after, and you think, oh, now we're gonna have to tank this, we're gonna have to do X, Y, Z. The refurb costs now racked up, and the buyers, like, we've just had one recently, we got a survey on it, we found a load of issues, big one, damp. So we went back to the seller, we'd already agreed a price, but that was subject to survey. And now this guy's been a little bit stubborn on flexing, so we may pull away from this deal.
Yeah, because it's got to be the right price. We're not saying go and find a house loads of problems and then pay full market value.
Definitely
for
not,
it, right?
No.
So yes, you want problems, but the reason that you want problems is so that you can get a rock bottom price.
Yeah. Exactly.
It's not so that you can still pay what those asking prices.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, you need to be able to uplift the property in some way.
Yeah.
But yeah, going back to that one, if he don't flex on the price, I think he will. But if he don't, we will have to walk away from that. And then that goes back to your original question on, will we be devastated? No. Mm. We'll have lost a little bit of money with the survey. But what we'll have not lost through not seeing all the rising damp and a little bit of structural issues and the roof felt's missing and, you know, a few other things. We've kind of dodged a bullet if we don't get it for a better price.
Well, that's an interesting point as well, actually, because that was something that I think a lot of people, where they make a mistake as well, is because they don't want to lose money. When they start down a process, and this could be buying a property, it could be setting up a business, it could be whatever, but
yeah,
once they've started, they're like, oh, you know, I'm in now. I don't want to quit. Or even like I was playing poker with some friends. Like we're not pros or anything. Mm. And I actually got knocked out. And my friend was betting. And then they were like, should I just go all in? And I was like, no. Bail out. Right, yeah. Bail out. They were like, but I've already put in so much. It's like, yeah, but you'll lose both. Yeah. If you get, like... You've already lost that.
Yeah.
You've got a crap hand. Yeah. The cards didn't come out for you. Bail out now.
Yeah.
I think you do need to know when to bail out.
Yes,
and definitely. And not to be like, oh, but I've already paid for a survey, I've already paid for a solicitor.
Yeah, this happens.
Yeah.
This can happen with a game. You can lose some money, but you've got to make sure that money's minimal with things like surveys and solicitor fees and broker fees. And like I said, sometimes you've got to know when to just shut shop and walk away.
Yeah. You need to know when to get out.
Yeah.
You need to put in the money to start with. You need to pay for the survey, etc. But
yeah,
if it comes bad,
yeah,
you don't be like, oh, I've lost. Oh, it's just part of the game.
Yeah, yeah. Somebody said to me, I was talking to somebody about it, and they were like, well, you know, you've paid, I think we paid about $950 for the survey. And they're like, well, you paid $950 for the survey now, so you're going to have to buy it, aren't you? And I'm like, no. Definitely not, because I'm going to lose a lot more than 950 if we pay the agreed price on top of all this extra stuff this surveyor's found for me. So you've got to know when to bail on it. But again, that comes back down to being educated enough to make that decision, because yeah. not get attached.
So quitting is good?
Well, not generally.
But you need to know when to quit.
Sometimes you've got to
and
quit,
when not yeah. to quit.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So
like if you're smoking, you need to quit.
100%. Yeah.
If you're gonna lose more money. I don't smoke. No. Do you?
No.
Do you not?
Occasionally vape.
Occasionally
vape. Yeah. I mean, it's a stressful industry we're in, isn't it?
Does it unstress you, vaping? De-stress you?
No, sometimes I think maybe it makes it worse.
I reckon so.
Yeah.
Because now you're killing yourself.
Faster.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, you've got to know when to quit.
All right, so know when to quit. You need to find problems.
Yeah.
You need to be educated so you can look for the... Because once you'll stop being aware of how to spot these problems, you start seeing them everywhere, don't you?
Yeah.
I talk about this with like... when you get into property development and you're looking for development opportunities, once you start knowing what a side plot looks like,
yeah.
you drive it out.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or, you know, oh, I could go out of a building. You start yeah. seeing the opportunities. It's not when you're buying a new car.
Yeah.
You know, when you're buying a new car...
See them everywhere.
And you make a decision. You see them everywhere, don't you? Yeah. They yeah. were there before.
Yes.
But your eyes have now been opened to that. And you start yeah. seeing them. So once you're aware of these problems, you'll start seeing them everywhere. Yes. The more educated you are, the more you spot. So you spot your problems.
Yeah.
You go in. Do you negotiate hard? You didn't sound like you negotiated very hard on that deal.
One little trick I do, which is a little bit naughty sometimes, but I'll get a price agreed, which I know they're going to accept. Then I'll get a surveyor in. And maybe I'll say to the surveyor, look, this is an investment property. I need you to tell me everything. I need to know all the problems that maybe I've not seen, because I've only been... I mean, obviously, when I go to view it, I can only be there an hour. I can't spend all day. You know, the estate agent's not going to be happy if I'm... 8 hours, I'm under floors and in lofts. There's only so much time I can spend. Whereas when it's a surveyor, they'll give him the keys, they can go out and do the thing for the day. So then when they give me the survey report back, then I'm like, look at this, look at this, look at this, look at this. Then we can start negotiating. And usually I'll go in hard and then come up a little bit.
Okay. And they're kind of like, fair enough, because...
Yeah, because all that's going to happen is if they say no and they put it back on the market, usually this type of property I'm looking at is an investment property. It's not like a first-time buyer house. So the next person who comes out to buy it is probably going to have a survey done as well, if they're smart enough to do that. And then they're going to find these things and say, well, actually, I'm not buying it because of the X, Y, Z. Mm. So then it's just going to keep, like the one I had, sat on the market for 3 years before somebody eventually comes and,
yeah.
and buys it.
I also think that when you're negotiating, that's also where it's key that you're not bothered if it goes through or not.
Yeah.
The worst negotiations I've ever done are for when it's a house for me personally.
Yeah.
Because
when your heart's on it.
My heart's on it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then you talk yourself
into
it.
That's where I've paid over the odds.
Yeah.
Because I'm emotionally involved. If it's an investment property, it's all about the numbers, and I don't give a toss.
Yeah.
I'm like, whatever.
Yeah.
You're such a better negotiator when you don't care.
Yeah.
You know,
that's
even
true.
If it is personally, like when I moved here, they tried to sell me the stuff inside the house. You know, like the curtains and stuff.
Mm.
And they put the prices, and I was like really lowballed because I wasn't bothered.
Yeah.
I was like, take it then. If you want, I don't care.
Yeah.
Or I'll pay that for it. You're cool.
And then when you say that to them, then they don't take it. Because they're like, well, the curtains aren't going to fit anywhere else.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly that.
Yeah, but that's being smart enough to know that, you know, from an investor view, that actually, are they going to remove them curtains? Very unlikely.
Yeah. So they did take some. Because there were some of them.
Out of spite.
Probably. Yeah, but then there was a couple more, like the chandelier in the stairway.
Chandelier, fair enough.
I paid decent for that. I was like, I'll offer you this stuff.
Yeah, that'll fit anywhere, wouldn't it?
That would. And it's a pain in the ass if they take it. You know. But you think when you're buying a house, you think you're going to get the light fittings, don't you? Do you know what I mean? You think,
yeah.
Well, you know. Doors, how much do I pay for the doors? Fuck off. I think when you're in that situation where you don't care,
yeah,
you're such a better negotiator.
Yeah,
you might lose the deal.
Yeah,
but you don't care.
But again, that goes back to knowing that it's not the last deal out there.
Mm.
Not getting too attached to it and thinking, if this falls through, I'm back in my 9-5. Because you're not.
Do you know what I actually like? I really like. I like it when I've got so many deals on the go that I can't do them all.
Yeah, like, there's like, a lot of problems.
I actually want some of them to fall out of bed.
Yeah,
because if they all came off, I'd be like, oh no,
yeah.
I've got too much. How am I going to get the money for this? You know what I mean? Yeah. That's a new problem, then, right? So if you want someone to fall out of bed, then you're really hardcore.
Yeah. And then they'll let you have it for next to nothing, and then you're like, I've got to buy it.
Oh, no!
I'd be stupid not to buy this.
Yeah. 100%.
Yeah, we're similar with this one we got with the survey. We've also got something else lined up in the background, and I'm like, now I'm looking at that one thinking, ooh, that looks good. So this is why now, I mean, I've kicked them hard with this one after the survey. They've already come down a lot, which tells me they're probably going to meet us somewhere. But I'm not that fussed, because if it does fall through, we might have lost 900 quid on a survey, but we've dodged a bullet. We're losing on the damp, and then there's option B.
Yeah.
And if not, option C.
And in the exact same way we mentioned poker earlier, you know, when you play poker, you put money in every time, right?
Mm-hmm.
But then if you've got a bad hand, then you fold out.
Yeah.
But then you make that back.
Yeah.
When you do get a good hand.
Exactly, yeah.
So it's just finding those good hands.
Yeah.
You put the money in, if it's a good hand, then
imagine if you just played every hand.
Yeah.
You know, occasionally you might win, but I'm pretty certain most of the time you're going to be driving home.
Yeah.
So
there's an element of risk.
Yeah.
Element of risk, but brilliant. No, I think that's really useful, some top tips. Hope you guys enjoyed that, and we will see you next week.